three, two, one, and welcome back to the SBH podcast. Okay, well, in this podcast, I don't really know what I'm going to be talking about. I guess we'll figure it out on our way through it, you know, because just it's been one weird week. It's very interesting because this is the transition for us on more. It's pretty much every most people north of Boston are starting to see that first push of bigger fish. I've heard reports all the way down, a little bit bigger whispers of bigger fish, and I was like, okay, maybe, because I've seen some nice bass, you know, probably some high 30s, and probably some that we're getting into that 40-inch range. And then it wasn't until yesterday where I saw the biggest bass so far of my season. And this is how it went. Okay, so I was fly fishing, and I'm talking about 50 fish day yesterday. And I've had a few really nice days of just, I mean, and I'm on the fly rod too. So fly fishing, I fly fish for, I think, I don't know, had to have been over 6 hours. I mean, it was a long time. And it was a 50 fish day. Literally, it was every cast, you know, just hooking into all 20 inch bass. And I was just catching them up and like crazy. And it was starting to get, the sun was just starting to go down a little bit. The tide was just turning from an incoming tide to an outgoing. And I'm walking along the rocks, and I'm in pretty steep cliffs that kind of just go down deeper into the water and drop off into 40 feet of water or more. And I'm fly fishing this little bank here, this little cut. And because what happens is you have these cliffs on Cape Ann that really are super steep. And right in the bass will sit right at the surface most of the time, and they'll sit in these little dips and cuts in, not cuts, but more like little dips in the rock. And they're not very big, but they're like little half moon cutouts almost. And that's where a lot of the bass will stage up because the water kind of swirls around in there. And not to mention the current in that area was just amazing. And it was a super flat, calm day. And the fishing wasn't very good at the beginning of the week and then started to heat up. And I was fishing along, you know, I was catching a lot of fish, and I cast it out there, I'm stripping it, I'm not really paying attention, I'm kind of looking away, and then I look down, I'm right about to pull the fly out of the water, and there's a 45 inch bass following my fly, turns sideways, and then kind of swoops down a little bit deeper. I was like, you know, when you're, I mean, my heart, like, I was losing it. And by the way, I'm not like a traditional fly fisherman in any sense, because I don't know the first thing about fly fishing. So I go as heavy as possible. I had 50-pound fluorocarbon leader just attached to my fly line. So I could have landed, especially in that spot where, again, just drops straight down. There's nothing for it to cut me off on. If I hooked into that fish, I was going to land it too, which was the even crazier thing. And I already had like 50 fish on that. It had to be a 30-pound bass. It was huge. And when I mean huge, I mean huge. It was massive. And I've never, you know, I've caught a bunch of these guys, and most of the time at night, and by most of the time, 99.9% of the time, I'll catch big fish at night. You don't see a lot of the time, you don't end up seeing big fish during the day. And when you do, it's stupid. They look like, because I'm seeing all these like 25 inch bass, and they're thin and they're skinny and they're just, you know, scooting around in there. And I'm like looking down. And then to see something that's just so much bigger, and the head on the thing was like, I mean, just to see something like that, you're like, oh my God, there's definitely different calibers of bass. And I've seen a couple 30 inchers, and I had a few, like when you're hooked into a bass, like I'd hook into one and there'd be a little school. And by the way, paved schools of like 30 bass. I mean, it was ridiculous amount of fish. And you'd hook into them, you'd be reeling them in, and then you'd have a school of bass following the one you hooked. And there was probably some mid 30 inch bass mixed in. The biggest one I hooked was, I actually lost it. I like kind of brought it around into this little tide pool area, and the tide pool was getting fresh water in and out of it. And I brought it in there, and then it shook the hook in there, and it had to be like 30 inch bass in the fly rod, which was awesome. Brought me just maybe a few, like, I don't know, 10 feet into my backing. It wasn't like, I had pretty heavy gear. You know, I fish a 10 weight fly rod, especially there, because, I mean, if you have a possibility of hooking a 30 pound bass, you definitely want to be, you know, you definitely want to be having some gear that you can really put some force on it. But on top of that, I had probably the worst week just in general. Just, I couldn't win this week. I kept breaking stuff. Oh, I broke so much stuff. I was falling. I was getting the landowners mad. Police called on me. It wasn't a good week for me. And it was just one thing after another. It all started at the very beginning of the week. I woke up super early, 2 a.m. type stuff, 2:30 I think, went to an estuary where the previous day I was throwing a 12-inch Danny plug, and it, you know, just big Danny on the surface right in the middle of midday, you know, because I had a suspicion that in this rip there was going to be a big fish. And then I had a big fish swirl up right beside it. Just, you know, when the bass are like right behind it and they're trying to just see what it is, that's what was happening. And it was, again, I couldn't see the bass because I was level with it at that point. But, I casted the Danny pretty far. So it was swirling, no joke, 15 feet behind this thing. Well, like 15 feet. Like, I was reeling it nice and slow like you do with a Danny plug. And I'm moving it probably a foot a second, you know, like super slow, crawling it. And the bass followed it for 15 feet, swirling up on either side. I was like, maybe it's more than one, but nah, I think it was just one solid, solid fish. And by solid, solid fish, I mean probably 35 inches, maybe 30, 35 inches. Again, didn't see it, but the wake that it was putting off with its tail, it's still early for us on Cape Ann. We don't necessarily start seeing our bigger fish until mid-June. But it's so funny because it's really like binary. I feel like once they're in, you know? Because once we started to catch big fish, I literally could, it was like the pattern was set in stone. The bass were going to be there every single one of those tides with the right wind, the right tide. And if the moon was there, you could have possibility of multiple big fish. So I was just really just targeting this one thing. And I'm trying to, and I patterned it out so well in early June, just mistakenly was one day throwing pencils and spooks and stuff, hooked up 30 pound bass, and you know, it just went from there. You know, we were able to build the pattern next day, 48 inch bass, same spot on eels. The 2 days later, another 40 pound, but like, it was one of those, it was just like, I have talked about this, like the progression of the spring multiple times, so I'm not gonna really get into it too much, but right now we're starting to see that early stage of there being bigger fish around. I just had a very hard time patterning down the fish. And that's my biggest problem right now is I think there are really big fish really, really, really early and like stupid early. Like I think we had 30 pound bass in like mid-May. I think we had 30 pound bass around on the bunker schools. I know people will probably say, no, there's no way, but I'm not joking you. I saw so many and heard guys, you know, see other big, like I saw big, big 20 pound fish, you know, in hitting bunker schools. I mean, it was ridiculous. Like I've seen some crazy stuff, and it's been very difficult with the amount of bait and whatever to really pattern down these fish correctly. And sometimes bunker can be a blessing and a curse. It definitely brings in big fish, but once the bunker schools start to thin, that's when you get those bass on the rocks very like consistently, and you can plan it and stage it very well. But I need to keep telling myself, and because I am ahead of where I was last year, pretty much. Like as far as like size, like average size of fish I'm catching are bigger than they were last year. I'm doing stuff in the estuaries where I'm trying to give the estuaries good tides, where I know I could probably do well off the rocks, but I want to focus my energy into some of the estuaries and rivers because I know that early in the season, you do get that second wave of big fish to get pushed in there, feeding on the herring and whatever. So I've been focusing a lot in the estuaries this spring, more than any other year ever. Like, really, I've never focused in the estuaries, period. And I'm trying to diversify my fishing portfolio, as you could say. That's not really the right word, but you know what I'm saying. Like, I'm trying to really pattern down stuff that works well for me. And I managed to think about, you know, the rivers were getting, that water was so warm so early. And I kid you not, I had to swim the other day off the rock, like, to it, to get around a spot, round to a spot, rather. And I was up to my neck in the water. It took my breath away. It's that cold still. I mean, it is so cold, and I hate cold water too. But, like, I got in the water and I was like chest deep and I was having a hard time breathing and I had to like pause for a moment. I had to be like with my feet on the ground. I had to be like, am I really doing this? And then I got my breath back a little bit and then I was like, okay, let's do it. And I was really just, you know, crawling across the rocks a little bit, like using the rocks to move me around the edge of an area. But yeah, the water is cold and I think it's still cooler than it was last year, because it was really weird. We had a super warm early spring, then it got really cold for that April, late April, mid to late April. It was like super cold, and the water got really cool, and the bass were not showing up, and then we got the schoolies in, but then it still was pretty cool for most of, you know, May, and a good amount of June was still pretty cool. And then all of a sudden, I feel like in the last 2-3 weeks, the temperatures have rose up a bit. And the bass fishing has gotten a lot better really quick. And I've had some banger days on with big topwater spooks. I've been using the Pumbaa Magnum Walker, and which, by the way, best topwater spook out there. Like, better than the dock, better, like, oh my gosh. The thing, so that my biggest problem about, like, spooks in general is either you can't cast them because you can't get good casting distance on them, or if you can, and most of the time the way you get good casting distance on a plug is you get a wooden plug and you can really cast it more than plastic plugs. Now you can, I mean, obviously people load plastic plugs like crazy and you can launch them a mile, but I'm just saying that, like, as far as spooks go, they tend to, the plastic ones tend to not be as heavy, and the Pumbaa plug Magnum Walker is a little bit heavier, and I can just get it out there further. But the way the nose is cut, the angle of the nose, the plug, is cut in such a way that all the other wooden plugs, all the other wooden spooks that I've tried, all dive under the water. And you know, when you're working your plug and you see a big swirl behind your plug, you wanna like have a little bit of a variation in the speed, or you wanna do something, or you mess up on the retrieve, and the thing, the plug dives under the water, and then the bass are gonna see what it is and not hit it. And this plug doesn't dive under the water. And believe me, I'm using heavy gear. I'm using 80-pound leaders tied to the biggest tactical angler clips that you can get. And I'm throwing gear that's not necessarily the best for using a topwater spook, but I'm able to work them perfectly fine. They haven't been diving under the water for me. And that's so key in my mind, because I can work plugs pretty well, and I kind of pride myself in my ability to work a topwater plugs like pencils and spooks, but I don't know, like I hate when things dive under the water, and because I feel like it really destroys the whole like momentum you have with the fish, like trying to see what this thing is, and its instinct of this thing's trying to get away from me, and all of a sudden it's like right in front of its face, and it's like, okay, this is nothing, like no resemblance to any fish that I'm eating, and then they just turn away. And that's the thing, like a lot of those topwater plugs are so good to get that reaction strike, that really quick, they see it and they don't have time to think about and process, not that really they think and process, but they don't really have time to think and process what it is, and they crush it. And a spook, if you've ever snagged bunker and you like put a snag hook through a bunker and then just threaded like a circle, whatever, you get it out there, and when it's getting chased, it comes up to the surface and it kind of starts doing circles on the surface. And then if the bass is going after it, it juts out to one side and then juts out to the other. And that's like, it looks so much like a spook. So you can imagine when you're working these spooks why they work so well, especially for big, big fish. And believe me, in the rocks, there, and especially when it's a calm day, overcast, calm day, I'm only fishing spooks. That's it. I won't even touch a pencil. I will stick with the spook and I will cast that all day. And I guarantee you that I would catch the biggest fish that I can that day with using a plug. And I have been, as I said in the last podcast, I've been monster hunting. My whole goal this season is just to get as big a fish as soon as possible. And then, like, obviously, different stages of my fishing will be different. I know that if I get a bunch of really big fish this year again, which I'm hoping that I can pattern out what I did last year and try that again, but if I can do what I did last year where I was able to get into a good bite. It was actually pretty late in the year. The best time, when I started to really key in and pattern a huge, really like, oh my God, 40-pound fish bite, like the most ridiculous thing in my life, that was all late July into October. That was the early October, I would say, is that was when I was really catching big fish every single time I would go out at night. Like, I knew it. I didn't have to spend hours fishing. I knew I could pull up there and first cast, there should be big fish there. And that didn't happen until way later in the season. And yeah, I had a bunch of luck really early in the season, but then that it was that, like, there was a lull around July where I was really having a hard time throughout. From like mid-July, or from like early to mid-July, where I was really having a hard time for 3 weeks getting onto a good solid bite and maintaining that bite. And that is the transition from spring to summer right there, is that for us on Cape Ann fishing wise. I mean, spring fishing goes from probably, I would say it kind of turns into summer fishing around July 4th. From like July 4th to from Well, since when the fish show up till July 4th, you have your spring fishing. And then after July 4th, you have summer fishing until, I don't know, probably August 1st. And then it's going into the fall run. Because then you get those bass starting to turn in, not really August 1st. I'd say probably early August, though, still like 15th, 10th, 15th. That's when the bass start to turn from Maine and Canada and whatever. And they start to come back, and that's when you get that really big bite. And it's been a really, really interesting spring fishing wise, because I've been doing better on my fly rod than I have my spinning for numbers, just because I feel like they're more willing to hit a fly right now. I don't know why that is. It just is the way it's working right now. I'm having a harder time, especially a little bit earlier, I was having a lot harder time getting them to hit my normal usual spring plugs, which are always mostly topwater plugs. Like, I don't like fishing under the surface in general. Although today, I'll talk about today a little bit later, but today I was using an Algag Whippet fish, which again, I hate that, like, that plug. I hate fishing soft plastics. I hate bottom bouncing. It's like my least favorite way to fish. And I was just killing them on the Algag Whippet fish. Like, oh my God, I couldn't. They were eating it, and I got some. And I'm in the estuaries, and you'll see the posts. Probably tomorrow, I'll post a few pictures. But I caught probably 15 bass in 2 hours. That, and most of them were in that mid 20-inch range. And on light tackle in the estuaries, I'm so happy and hyped with that, because that's spring fishing at its finest. And yeah, I mean, it's a whole different type of fishing. You cast a pretty heavy soft plastic into a rip, and I'm just twitching the top, just keeping it off the bottom, just maintaining pressure to it. I guess now I'm talking about what I did, and I wanted to talk about it later, but I just completely lost my train of thought from earlier. So we're just gonna move on to this, I guess. And I'm just popping it in this rip, and I was getting just pounded like every single time. I was just getting cracked by these fish. And I worked this whole like bend in the estuary, and I was just, I mean, every 10 feet I was catching a bass, and I felt really good about it. I did catch some really small bass, like really like some of those like tiny ones. They're so big that they ate the whole soft plastic, and they're like this big, and my Algag's like that big. It just shows you how, and okay, and this is my something that I really want to actually talk about. I think people don't understand how big of a prey item a bass can eat. if a schoolie this big is fitting in, literally it's that big, and it fits an algag whippet fish that's that big and about that thick around all the way in its mouth, then a 40-pound bass can eat, like, I don't even know. Like, a 40-pound bass can eat a 10-pound bluefish or blackfish or whatever. And they just, I mean, flounder. Like, that's the other thing. They're probably eating huge, huge flounder and stuff, just inhaling it. And, I mean, that's the thing. It's pretty extraordinary when you think, we're fishing with plugs that are this big, and if you're like going crazy, oh, I'm fishing with a Danny plug that's 12 inches. Oh, that's huge. Not to a 30, 40 pound bass. That's tiny. That's probably on the lower end of the scale of fish that they're consuming. And that's why when I'm fishing with eels, I have no problem throwing a 24 inch eel, 25 inch eel that's that thick around and 2 pounds and huge, like that long. No problem throwing that. In fact, I caught 45 inch bass on that, which is like a high 30-pound bass. And sometimes even if 45-pound bass can be 50 pounds if it's fat enough. But it just shows you that, like, they're crushing it. You know, there's different levels of, like, what I've really gotten to, I've done a lot of sight fishing this spring, so I've really tried to identify when a bass is seeing something as food or seeing something as potential, like, maybe food. Like, how do I word this? When a bass sees something as food versus as a as like maybe food but also might not be, so they're kind of just like trying to check out what it is, so they kind of whack it but they're not eating it. There's a difference between that, and you see that when you're fishing eels. You're reeling this eel here, and that first hit, it's in its stomach, like, instantly. When they think it's alive, which a live eel is alive, they swallow the whole thing, like, instantly. And that, to me, is shows you want to have everything be that way. And if you can, then you've predicted it correctly. I've had times where I'm using a pencil popper, and they inhale the pencil popper because they think it's alive, whatever they're feeding on. They're feeding on bait fish. Even a huge Magnum Walker, I've had a 25-inch bass swallow a whole Magnum Walker. And it just shows you that the when they think it's alive, and they think it's real food, they will inhale it so quickly. So how do you pattern something and trick the bass into it thinking it's like real food? And I've had a very difficult time getting bigger fish to bite this season, because obviously the bigger fish are more experienced, and they are they know, because they've lasted this long in the ocean, they know what a real bait fish is and what isn't, you know. And I've had two shots, that one with the fly when I was not really paying attention. And by the way, after I pulled the fly out of the water, I cast it out in front of where, like, the direction that it was swimming, and I took two strips and caught a schoolie. So who knows if that fish was going to come back and whack it? But it just is. It's one of those things that, like, I think about that, and I'm like, okay, that was shot number one, really, of the season. Besides probably number three, because I did lose that other one that was probably 40 inches on the fly too. Really early. Again, what I'm trying to say is there was shocking amount of, like, if you get as close as possible to those massive bunker schools, there were some huge fish on those bunker schools. I don't care what anybody says, if they're saying, no, we didn't see big, like, no, there were 30 pound bass on those bunker schools. That's fact, because I saw 10 bass one day just riding the surface crushing bunker, and they all had to be 20, 25 pounds. Like, ridiculously big. I have footage of it. I don't know if you can actually see it. It was GoPro footage, but I turned the GoPro on. They're probably 200-300 yards offshore, like, too far for me to cast. Like, I can cast on it with, like, wind to my back, max cast with, like, one of my best casting pencils on maybe 150-200 yards if I'm lucky with some wind helping me. Yeah, there's no chance I could have gotten to that. I was probably I could cast when I was like ripping these casts, I could get halfway, halfway out to where those fish were. But yeah, I didn't get anything like that to hit. Although I was getting a bunch of like 20, 25-inch bass. I've been on the like medium-sized bass grind, like gotten a lot of just medium size healthy fish. And all of the school and I saying all of the schoolies that I've caught this spring have been so fat. So that just alone makes me so happy because generally you're fishing in the spring, there's a mixed bag. You'll have a few that are, you know, really fat and full of food, and then you'll have some that are super paper thin. I haven't caught a single bass that's paper thin yet this season. And that really excites me. But back to my whole thing about sight fishing and when a bass thinks that the food is alive and like it's an actual prey item to them. So I've been doing a lot of like standing on the edge of a cliff and you see these schools of like 10, 15 bass swim by, or there'll be individual bass in every single little current break. And I'm sitting there with my, and really what's been doing, like I always say, I hate fishing soft plastics, but I've been suckered into fishing soft plastics because I've been fishing this way and I've been catching so many bass this way. This is how it's happening. 6-inch sluggo on an owner beast hook. That's what my money thing has been for me. Just casting it out and just doing a few twitches and then bam, they're on it. And that's what I've been using for spinning gear. And then fly, I've just been using like a little bunker fly, or I've been using I don't know, little like Seaver, like it's just stuff like that. And but all like smaller size stuff, and the bass have just been crushing the flies. Same thing with the soft plastics. And I kind of view flies as like a form of fishing with a soft plastic. To me, it just the way they fish is very similar. And then that in bucktails as well. I like a bucktail is a substitute for like a more durable soft plastic in my mind. You can pretty much catch any bass with a bucktail that you did on a soft plastic. Although you can fish soft plastics like there's so many different types of soft plastics, sizes and whatnot. So that's where the soft plastic gets you. If you have a, you can have a giant soft plastic this big with a big paddle tail on the back, or you can have like a tiny little, like there's just, even though you can have like stuff like that with bucktails, it's not to the same extent. But I did a lot of experimenting where I was in very, very clear water, but like 40, 50 feet deep water. And I'd throw a 4-ounce bucktail with a huge soft plastic on the, like I'm talking 13, 14, well, actually, I think it's an 18-inch, it was giant. It's huge paddle tail soft plastic. And you saw, I talked about it in one of my things. It's what I fish when the bass are being very finicky and stuff. Anyway, so I during the nighttime, and if there's bigger fish in the area, they're gonna probably eat that because it's just a big prey. But I'm casting this thing out with my 4-ounce bucktail. It's sinking down. It's making a whole bunch of big disturbance in the water, and I feel it hit the bottom. Pop it up. I'm reeling it in. You know, doing kind of like trying to work it a little bit like a bucktail, and then you'll bring it up, and you'll have a school of like 40 bass following it, all schoolies. But it just shows you that they're very curious fish, and they see this and it's looks, and they sense that it is like a wounded bait fish, and they want to check it out, make sure that it is what it is. And I even had bass as go as far as nipping at the tail of the soft plastic, but nothing would eat it. And then I did the same thing with a giant wooden double jointed swimmer, like a jointed, yeah, like crazy big double jointed swimmer in bunker, cast that thing out, reeling it in, would have a whole bunch of fish chasing and following it, and but nothing would commit. But then there are certain things that I would use. So then later in the day, I would use a live eel or something, and I'd cast it out there. You'd have a whole bunch of fish come up and group around it, and then you'd have one of the bigger bass of the school pound it, either grab it, kind of try to run with it, and then you'd have another one eat it. Like it was one of those things where you're like, they knew it was alive and they're trying to, but they weren't quite big enough to really I always think that eels are like the perfect version of what they are for us as fishermen. They stay alive. Like here's the thing, the worst thing you could do with it with live eels is set them in water that's not moving. Just set them in like a tide pool that has water in it and whatever, but it's not moving, they'll die like that. All you need to do is keep them in a mesh bag and you just need to keep them just a little bit moist. Not even that moist. Like every 30 minutes, if even if it's blazing sun out in 80 degrees, I'm dipping them in the water every 30 minutes, you know, just to keep them a little bit wet. Otherwise, they're perfectly fine, and they'll be fresh for hours. And I'll even fill a bag with 10 eels, and I'll fish two of them a night, put them back in the bag. And I had literally the last moon phase, because it was pretty slow, to be honest, for me at least. I mean, I'm so focused on trying to catch giant fish that, like, I had multiple days that were over 30 fish days. But they're all like 25-inch bass. And I really, really am trying to get on the biggest fish I can. I would take one 35-inch bass over 100 schoolies. Like, if I fished for 6 hours and caught one 35-inch bass, I would take that over catching 100 schoolies in 6 hours. So that's, like, where my mindset is. Like, I want the biggest fish I can get right now. So I've had success in days where I've caught just a ridiculous amount of schoolies. I don't tend to take a lot of pictures of the schoolies. I know that's like what all I've been posting right now, but I'm gonna do some different stuff on Instagram soon. But anyway, that's besides the point. But I've been trying to really like get into the mind of the fish, you know, see, but in an interesting way, because it was just the way that it played out for me. I was fishing and the bass were not acting. They're acting weird around things that they didn't think were real, and they were kind of going after it, but they weren't. But I still was having a hard time getting them to eat things. Now, I did everything. I started burning. So this is my new thing, especially in estuaries. You want a tactic that nobody ever has tried, and I just stumbled upon. I found a very small knockoff, like Sabeel Magic Swimmer, like about that big. And it's really shiny, and I broke, like, the first day I did this, snapped the hooks, like, completely snapped a hook. And these are not big fish, like, maybe 28 inches every once in a while, maybe 30, and this was way early when I figured this out. But, so I changed the hooks immediately to 4X Strong, I don't know if they're 4X Strong, but they're, like, size 2 VMC treble hooks, and they're, this plug is very specific for one thing, that reaction strike. At least to me it is. Like, I'm not fishing this because I want to like slowly fish it and get a bass to eat this. No, I have other plugs that I would do that will do that better. That plug does something that no other plug in my bag does. I can rip it through the water as fast as I can and twitch it, and I'm like going like this, where I'm using each time I'm twitching to help me reel faster. So I'm twitching and it's helping me reel faster on top of every single time. It's kind of like a rhythm that I have to get in, but I'm reeling this as fast as I can through the water and I'm getting those strikes. So, and that's sometimes what you have to do on a slow day. When it's hot and the sun's straight above you and it's blazing down, you can't get them to hit anything. You can't even see the bass. You throw that thing on. And the reason that it works so well is there's no lip or anything to really get it to rise up in the water. It's a slow sinking. It sinks probably like this fast. Like pretty slow sinking. And yet if I keep my rod tip down, I rip it through the water as fast as I can, then pause it, it's going to get slammed. And then rip it, pause, slam. Like that's what's going to happen. And I figured that out just because I don't know what I was fishing with. What was I fishing with? I want to say it was a small SP minnow. And I was reeling it, and I was taking it out of the water really fast. I was reeling it really quickly, and it went really fast all of a sudden. And then I had a fish follow, like, come in really quick and take a swipe at it. And I'm like, interesting. So then I was like, okay, if I reel the SP minnow really fast like that, the bass are going to be able to catch up to it and really see what it is, even if I reel it super fast, because that's the way how finicky the bass were that day. So I knew that I had this little, little knockoff glide bait, and I was like, okay, I can throw this on, and I know that I can rip this without any, because it's very streamlined in the water. It's just gonna shoot through the water. It's gonna be flashy. It's gonna get the attention of the bass. It has a little rattle in it. It's gonna be perfect for this. So sure enough, cast it out there, probably 30 fish on it, like bam. and it was 12 o'clock, 75, not 75 degrees, it was probably like 73 degrees, but still like hot, like really hot, and just bad conditions for fishing. But I was in the estuaries and the water's a little bit murkier and the bass were crushing this thing. Okay. Like a week later, bass were being super finicky off the rocks, was having a hard time catching them on anything. I was like, I have this thing in my bag from the estuaries. I'm going to go throw this in the water. But this water is crystal clear. And I'm ripping it really fast through the water. And I have these schools of like 30 bass come up from who knows where. And I'm talking about paved bottoms of fish. Chase the thing up and then turn. And then turn and then do like, and then the next time it's like half the amount of fish, half the amount of fish. And then nothing even pays any attention to it. And I'm like, okay, why is that not working? And it turns out that my hypothesis is that probably the water is too clear and they can understand what that is and that it's not real. The same way that a big fish would see that and definitely not chase it because it's a tiny little bait fish moving really fast and they don't want to expend that amount of energy for food that big. And so I'm really trying to like analyze why this is not working and how, because I keep getting, so this is where I'm at today, right now. I have seen, I don't know, probably less five, maybe five bass in the height, like 38 to 45 inches, give or take, in the past, I don't know, month-ish. And I haven't been able to get any of them to eat anything. So it's funny watching these fish and how they're reacting to certain things and the way their mindsets are. Now, if you have a really hot bite, obviously I'm gonna be fishing topwater this early in the spring in general, just because not only when you fish topwater, you can fish a small, like a really small topwater, like a rebel jumping minnow size topwater, and you can catch like a 20 pound bass on a little rebel jumping minnow in an estuary. When the bite is like on, you can catch a really big fish on something like that. So, but you can't catch a really big, I mean, you probably could, but it's harder to get bigger fish to hit smaller plugs in general. It really depends on what they're feeding on. There's, and all the rules in fishing can be broken, but this is just general rule of thumb. You could probably catch a fish on a, like you can catch 50 pound bass on a tiny little, like 2 inch hoagie soft plastic with a tiny hook in it if they're feeding on rain bait. But that's not going to happen if the bass are like just normally out there, not keyed in on tiny little bait fish. They're going to be hunting down the biggest bait out there. They're not going to hit something that big. But, you know, that's what it is. Sometimes they do. So where I'm at right now, and I hope I explained this well, is this: the bass are so interesting in how they react to things and the like, the school mentality of the fish. When there's competition, it's bam, instant. But if there's no competition, they're not messing with it. Sometimes the competition is so ridiculous where you have like paved, like there's one day where I was fishing and I had one school of fish. It was super clear water. I saw them coming and I kid you not, it was like 50 bass. They were all like low 20 inch bass. And they're all like cruised, like huge. And I had my little 6 inch hoagie soft plastic, casted it out in front of them, you know, and ripped it. And I was skipping it across the surface of the water. Boom, 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 boom. One fish actually ate it. But that's how aggressive they were feeding. And it was lights out. But it just shows you the competition. Once one bass goes and hits it, they're all on it. Like every single bass turned and chased after it. And that was the whole thing. Like, I realized that it's really important to that, you know, if there are multiple fish following your plug, you can speed that thing up real fast and they'll still come and chase it down and whack it. And, you know, it's pretty, it's different when you're talking about a solitary big fish. You know, you can't reel something too fast because they're not even going to pay attention to it. But if you give it too long to look at something, they're not going to eat it either. So you have to find that happy medium. And then on top of that, it's got to be very, very specific to what the bass is eating for it to even go out of its way to even chase the thing. So the only reason why that bass, that 45-inch bass, is just my estimate of size, but it was like, I caught a lot of really big fish last season. It was in the middle of, it wasn't like the biggest bass that I caught last season, but it was definitely like in that mix of probably top 10 biggest fish I caught that last season. Like, it was definitely in that top 10 size. But the reason that that bass even gave my fly like a glance, which is really what it did, is it turned once up at it and then it turned sideways when it got closer to the surface, and its big oar tail went, and then it kind of like started going away, and I launched my fly out there, took two strips and hooked a schoolie, I was like, the one time I was trying to catch all these schoolies, and the one time I didn't want to catch a schoolie, the thing ate it anyway. The reason it looked at my fly was that fly looks like a bunker, and it looks really well like a bunker, like a medium size, 5-inch, like medium size bunker. And the bass are feeding on adult bunker a little bit offshore. That fish was in the one little bit of stronger current across the rock area. It turns into a rip about mid tide or a little after high, which is where it was at that point. It was like a little after high tide. And so it was really, the current was surprisingly fast there. And so that's why there was a big fish there. The only reason it looked at it is because it kind of looked like what it was feeding on, but the operative word there is it looked at it. It didn't like open its mouth. It didn't chase it really. It turned up, moved probably 8 feet, and looked at it, and then swam away. So how do you get that fish to actually eat your fly? And that's where I'm at right now, or whatever you're using, your blank, your lure. The thing that I've had a very hard time with is fishing at night has not been my friend. I've got my biggest fish of the season at night, obviously, because that's what always happens, but the fishing at night hasn't been fire. Like, hasn't been like normal. Like, normally, well, I guess normal, it's been pretty normal, but I don't know. Like, the bites that I've been getting on are bigger fish, but there's much, much less of them, which is not necessarily a bad thing, but at the same time, it makes it harder to know if you're in the right spot. And again, a lot of this is experience based. Is like, you know, I fished a spot, like there's spots that I fish in that I have held big fish for me, and I know that like if I stick out there long enough, I'm gonna know if there's big fish there because I'm gonna hook one. And so I'm gonna like try to pattern that out and stick to that spot and see if I can actually get into a big fish. And I was able to catch, I don't know, like a few 28, 30 inch bass, and it was fine. I've had decent luck with rig deals, especially in the evening, and even on cloudy overcast days, I've been doing really well with rig deals where the bass are eating it, to the point that I actually hooked a bass early in this week on a rig deal, but my rig deal like fell off because I forgot to, I think, crimp the open eye hook like an idiot when I was rigging the eel. And the rig deal fell off, and the bass got hooked on the tactical angler's clip, like threaded around its lip. I've never seen that happen before, but that was pretty interesting. I caught it on the tactical angler clip. And that was funny to me, but that was in an estuary, you know, went during a cloudy day, and I was fishing next to another guy, and he was not catching anything, and he's a really good fisherman. And I was further down, and I hooked into that, and like it was a almost 28-inch bass. It was probably 27 inches. It was a decent bass midday on the rig deal, but it just shows you that the bass's like attitude to things have been like, I'm trying to really like figure out how to best put my, because I keep encountering these big fish during the day, but I'm having a super hard time getting them to commit to eating. And I don't know how many times I've encountered fish like that at night, and they're just swerving on my lure or eel or whatever, which would be, I would be shocked if they're swerving on eels, but who knows, maybe they are. Maybe they're just looking at my eel and being like, nope, which I guess could happen. But the way the bite's been, if they're thinking it's real, they're crushing it, no matter if they're a schoolie or a little bit bigger fish. And I don't know, it's been a real mind bender, I guess. because I've had these opportunities at these larger bass and I'm just not capitalizing the way I want to on them. So it's funny just watching how the bass interact with each other and how they sit in current breaks. And, you know, what something that I didn't know is if a bass comes out of its area where it's staged up, even to look at something, it's gone, you know, after that. It's not going back to stage up again. It's going to swim away. And I didn't know that they did that. So it makes sense, though, because if you're fishing like a topwater and you get a blow up on your topwater and you're going along, it's more than likely not the same fish that's hitting your topwater plug again. I'm like pretty confident, because just out of the amount of fish that I've caught this past season, and they're not the same bass. Now, granted, I've definitely caught fish that go right back to the same area and they hit the plug multiple times, so maybe not. But I'm gonna kind of redact that comment now that I'm thinking more about it. But it's pretty interesting that I haven't seen a bass restage up. And I wonder why. I wonder why, you know, because you'll have your little 6-inch soft plastic, you twitch it twice, and you're about to pull out of the water, and the bass, who's been is staging up on a rock right beside you, you know, right beside where you cast it, will come up and look at it, and then they'll just veer away and swim away. Sometimes you can pitch it out in front of that thing, and they'll clobber it then, but they're not going back to where they were to stage. They're leaving, which is kind of interesting to see. The same way when that bigger fish, I don't know if it was staged up there or what, because I didn't see it initially, but when it did come up and look at the fly, it turned away and started swimming away. And, yeah, if I knew that it was where it was, like, if I saw it staged up like like all those schoolies were, and it was just sitting in the current, then I would have been like, okay, I'm going to get myself in the perfect position. I'm going to give this bass as long as possible to see the fly before it eats it. So I'm going to cast from far away in front of it by 10 feet, and then I'll bring this fly right across its nose, and it's probably going to suck it in. And maybe I'll be super lucky to get a fish like that to hit. And then the other thing that I've been really experimenting with as far as topwater plugs go is when you see a bass crush something, to speed it up really fast or stop it or do something like that, just to like change things up. And I've been having a lot of luck with either like jumping a spook. So the way that works is like you're working your spook through the water, and then when the bass hits it or swirling behind it, then you twitch down and your plug will pop, land, and then then pause it for just a moment, and generally in that moment the bass will hit it and then just start working it again if it doesn't. And most of the time the bass will come up and smash it right there. It's very rare that you have a bass following your spook and it doesn't eat it. Most of the time they'll come up and they'll whack it, but there is that small percentage of times that when you're fishing the spook that they'll hit it a few times and they'll get, you know, bored of hitting the plug. I mean, it happens, but yeah, it's been a very interesting year trying to think about how these fish are reacting to, like, how I can get a bigger fish to react differently to things. Topwater has been better for a lot of fishing, that a lot of the bigger fish, like if I've been using spooks, the bass seem to kind of come up and look at a lot of the spooks that I've been throwing, or pencils. So I think really what I'm at right now is trying to just throw larger profile stuff, especially topwater. And as the bass have gotten more and more aggressive, the fishing has just gotten much better all of a sudden in the last like 4 days. I feel like it's really kind of getting into that swing of that later spring feel to the fishing, where the water's still cold, but there are some bigger fish mixed in. And what I am very shocked about is I haven't heard anything about the canal. Normally I get good, like normally the canal, I mean, a lot of you guys know this, normally by now we've already had a pretty crazy day at the canal. Not that I really ever fish the canal. I have a lot of people that I like fish with that love fishing the canal and go fish there most, like that's their main area. And I can't deal with that. I don't like fishing the canal. I've had one day of success out of many days of failure. And so I just don't like fishing it, but I think that I've been close to, I've almost fished it twice this season, and I'm glad I didn't both times, because both times that I almost fished it, nobody caught a fish apparently. And it's been weirdly slow there, and I expect I would be shocked if I don't hear a huge bite before the next new moon, just because, like, I think about this rationally. And this new moon of June, the new moon in June is the best chance you have of catching a 50 pounder on Cape Ann. And the new moon in August, the two best chances you have of catching a 50 pound bass on Cape Ann. Now, there's other moon phases that are productive, but I don't think for the healthiest fish. I think the healthiest fish are in the spring and the fall. But in the spring run, the fall run. But most of the time, well, at least for the spring, it's the end of the spring run and the beginning of the fall run is the best times to really get into the biggest fish you can possibly get into. Because the fish are really fat and they're eating as much as possible before they go for their migration or start their migration. And so they're as big as they can be, and then they migrate. Now, most of the time, by this, the spring, they're a little bit smaller fish because they have been migrating for miles. But there's been so much bait around that if you hook into a big, big fish this season, you have a good chance of hooking into a 50-pound bass. Like, if the bass is over 40 inches or 45 inches or 45 plus, like, if it's 45 or bigger, you have a good chance of getting close to that 50-pound mark, which is pretty nuts, especially off the rocks of Cape Ann. And I don't feel like that's too crazy of a thing to say this year, just because the amount of bait that's in the water right now and how healthy all the fish that I've caught this year look, I wouldn't be shocked if I catch a bass that's not very long and really, really heavy. But yeah, we'll see. But what I'm trying to get at is this next new moon here is gonna be the time that I hooked the biggest fish of the season. So hopefully I don't screw it up or the wind isn't bad. I just need one day of good wind. If I get one day, which I hope, because you have, what, 6 days? I give myself, like, 6 days of moon-affected fishing. And if I don't get one good wind in that 6 days, which is impossible because the wind changes enough that I should get at least one day where I feel confident of hooking a big fish in one area, that I know for a fact I'll be able to hook a big fish in that area. But when I feel like I'm rambling at this point, not that this whole podcast isn't just me rambling. I started this podcast, I have no notes. The past few podcasts I've had no notes for, and I actually like them better, personally. And I just think that it's because I'm able to, it's just like my stream of consciousness talk in my own head when I'm thinking about things. It's all about finding patterns and consistency to be successful fishing. And I do have to say, if you are on Cape Ann or you have the ability to get to Cape Ann, the fishing off the rocks when you have an onshore wind has been ridiculously good. You want to find cliffs, and you want to find cliffs where there's a good amount of current, and you want to bring sunglasses and a 6-inch sluggo with an owner beast hook, and you want to just twitch it a few times in front of them, and it's just been huge schools of fish. And that's just how I've heard other guys doing having pretty similar bites to me, but you know, that's just how I've seen the fishing. And I would love to see other guys get onto these bites, and maybe somebody else has better luck getting into a 40 pound fish than I do, or 40 or 30 pound, wow, or a 30 pound bass. That's because I feel like I fish there for, like, every single time I fish there and I'm getting to a good bite off the rocks, like I have been, it's been like a 5-6 hour day of fishing. And generally, if I do that, I see one bass that is huge, like massive, massive. And I feel like you put in the time like that, like there's a difference between putting in time and not catching anything and then putting in time and catching stuff. And believe me, when I failed so hard waking up at 2:30 in the morning and fishing from 2:30 to like 7, didn't catch anything. That was the worst I failed, period. Broke one of my corkers. Brand new corkers. I broke my corker, and I don't know how. I mean, I like got suction cupped off the bottom, and it was like the spikes, and I just was too lazy to switch them to the little rubber plastic ones. So naturally I was pissed, and because of all of that, then one of the eyes to my fly rod, one of the guides to it, like just the thing came out of the sleeve of epoxy that it's in, like one of the, it's really hard to describe this, but it's like a little wire, like curly Q, but like on either end they stick into the rod, and one end of the rod stem little like popped out. I was able to push it back in, fish the rest of the day with it, but now my fly rod is broken. Not broken, but like now I have to send it back to St. Croix and get them to put a new eye on the thing, which is really weird because I didn't like bang it on anything. It just like came out, and I'd have hated, and that was at before I had that big fish look at my fly. I would have hated for that thing to just pop out and then like my whole top of my fly rod to just fold because it gets some pressure that it's not able to handle. Yeah, it would be really, I would like, I'm trying to think because there's also like some decent current in that spot. I had a stupid amount of line though. Like I probably have like close to 1,000 yards of line on that reel. I have a 12 weight reel that I was fishing with. 12 weight, let that sink in. And I've 40 pound backing, and I probably have 1,000 yards of line, probably. But it, just putting into all into perspective, that fish would have probably taken 100 yards of line easily on the fly rod. And then because of how heavy the fish is, it would slow down. Obviously, once it got out to about 100 yards, it would slow down, but then it would just be dogging me in the current with its big tail. And it would have been like a 35, 40 minute fight. And then, or even closer to an hour, it would have taken a stupid amount of time to land that fish if I hooked into it. And the fish it would have just been so bad on so many levels. Never, like I try to fish as heavy as I can go because number one, I want to land the fish. And number two, it's not good to fight a fish for more than, if you're fighting a fish longer than, and I'll give you credit if you're in the canal, but if you're fighting a fish from the rocks, sandy beach, whatever, estuary, for more than 3 minutes, then your gear is way too light, in my personal opinion. Like 3 minutes is as long as you want to fight a fish. Now, granted, if you catch anything like 30 pounds and over, you'll sometimes, like if you're not expecting it, you break into that longer period of time, but you should shoot for landing the fish within 5 minutes, because other than that, then you're like starting to hurt the fish. Then you can, like when you're reviving the bass, it's kind of like, it's not going to be very good. One of the weirdest things that I've ever had happen to me fishing is landing a really big fish really quickly and then reviving it in the water, super cold, and reviving it really quickly and then it just dying, you know, just keeled over. I'm like, the thing, like I like hooked it, barely hooked it with one hook of the 4X strong VMC treble. Thing was bent, like literally the back hook of the thing, and so I didn't do any damage. The fish was definitely on its way out though. Yeah, really weird. Had that happen once, but revived the fish like for a crazy amount of time, then it just expired. I don't know, must have had some. It was also paper thin. It should have been a mid 30 pound bass, and it didn't even break 20. It was like 27 pounds or something, and it should have been like 34 pounds or something like that, 35. It was like, it was big enough. It was like, I think it was 44 inches. I have a measurement of it somewhere, like a picture of like measuring tape on it. It was big, and it was broad daylight too. Happens though. That's the sucky part. But I try to redeem myself in like all the fish that I may have released that haven't been the healthiest, whether they get gut hooked or whatever, because it's part of the sport. I don't care who you are and what hooks you're fishing with. As I talked about in the podcast with Ryan, I don't care who you are. You're going to gut hook fish. You're going to nick their like arteries or whatever. You're going to kill bass. That's just part of the game. It's just how it works. But if you're, I mean, that's where I don't really know where I'm going with this, but regardless, what I'm trying to say is that's part of the game. Don't worry about it. It happens. You kill fish. That's how it's going to go. Sometimes they're big, sometimes they're small. Now we're going to have to really try our best to keep to not, like, injure fish over 35 inches, even though it would be really sucky to just release, like, a big, big fish and just let it float away. But it's the way it has to be. Although, honestly, I feel like we should, like, I feel like you should just be able to keep it at that point. I don't know. I should put something on my Instagram, very controversial topic, but I should say, if you gut hook a big fish, do you keep it if it's big, or do you release it? Because I really think that, even though that's the law, I feel like, are you not honoring the life of the fish the best by just letting it float away? Yeah, the crabs and whatever will eat it, but you can also eat it. You can enjoy it more yourself. I don't know. Anyway, I should do something like that on my Instagram just to see what everybody says. But I hope you guys enjoyed this podcast. Again, this was me kind of just rambling on. I didn't even know where I was going to go when I started this podcast, but I got into, and I think the name of this podcast is going to be something along the lines of me talking about the behavior of striped bass, and definitely didn't know what I was going to say when I started that sentence, what the name was going to be, and so I tried to drag that out as long as possible, but anyway, so that I could think of the name of the podcast. But yeah, it's going to be like the something along the lines of the bass's behavior, like how they behave and how you can get them to really really think that what you're offering is alive. But anyway, again, thank you guys for listening or watching this podcast. I hope you enjoyed it, and I'll see you next time.